Real stories, reliable information, the latest technology and news. Welcome to the Plastic Surgery Hub podcast, connecting people with practitioners.
Hey listeners, it's Trish Hammond here again from the Transforming Bodies podcast. And today, once again, I've got the delightful Dr. Jason Oates from Academy Face Body in Subiaco, Perth. And today we're going to have a really interesting topic that we're talking about. So we're going to talk about facial rejuvenation, but we're going to talk about it on a minimally invasive point of view and also on a non-minimally invasive, which would be, I guess, invasive as well. So we're going to talk about invasive and non-invasive techniques that Dr. Oates uses to help us get the best looking face that we can. So welcome, Dr. Oates.
Hi, Trish. Hi, everybody.
So good to have you here today.
Thank you.
So I don't even know where to start at for the top of this, because this is just so a topic that I'm interested in. We did a Facebook Live last night and everyone's saying, what about the face? What about the face? So this is perfect. So tell us, what do you offer or what's available actually for minimally invasive techniques? And I guess that would mean people that are too young to need a facelift or don't want one, or, you know, like, where do we start with it all?
Yeah, so many. Because somebody was asking me to give a talk yesterday and they were saying, oh, well, I specialize in minimally invasive things. And I said, well, yes, we do. We do a lot of that. But I was just in Africa with a cardiothoracic surgeon, and he was telling me how they do heart-lung transplants and it takes 5 hours to do it. And, you know, and that's as big an operation as you can do. And I was thinking, yeah, my last facelift and eyelids took 6 hours to do. You know, my operation's bigger than your heart and lung transplant.
Wow.
So it is that sort of two sides. So when I came back to Australia from the US 20 years ago, it was just at the start when Botox and fillers were brand new things, just coming into cosmetic medicine, and surgeons weren't really doing that at that stage. The S-lift, so the short incision sort of style facelift, had just been written up, and I'd been trained in that, and so it was this less invasive sort of version of surgery. And also being at the start of my career, I wasn't sure I wanted to jump in and do the biggest, most invasive facelift that I'd seen while I'd been training. So yeah, we started off with lots of that sort of what was minimally invasive. So, you know, relaxing some dynamic creases with Botox and starting to fill the face with fillers. Threads came in very soon after that. And they were so basic, the threads back in those days. They were hand cutting the little cogs into the permanent threads. And in fact, there were classes that would teach you how to hand cut your own threads. And so threads have come such a long way. And at that time, having a technology to tighten the face without burning all the skin off like we did with, say, a CO2 laser, that was sort of a holy grail. And we saw so many. Oh, we've got music.
No, so that was my phone ringing.
I switched my phone off.
Get off the phone, Christy. Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that.
Yeah, there was all of these things. And now we've got technologies that does tighten the face without having to burn it off. So it's come a long way.
Wow. And so if that's where you, that's kind of where you started, and I can understand it'd be pretty, you know, scary to think, oh my God, I'm going to do this, you know, 6 hour facelift. Like, do you find that, like, is that something that you're doing a lot of? Because, like, I know for myself, like, I have a lot of non-surgical, well, not a lot, but you know what I mean? I've got, because I learn about all this stuff, I want to go and have the ultraformer and, you know, get my, you know, neck looking nice and clean. But there's going to come a point where it's not going to cut it, do you know what I mean? Which is kind of a roundabout soon now. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then we cut it.
Exactly. And that's what I'm thinking. So is this a natural progression? Is everyone going to go there? Is that, you know, like, is that something that is becoming more and more, like, are you doing more of them is what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, well definitely I'm doing more of them. So I generally do a facelift every Monday morning. That's just the way we sort of end up scheduling them. But in a couple of weeks' time, I've got three in a week, which is, you know, quite a lot of facelifts in a week for me. And I do a lot of facelifts. And now that I've switched to deep plane facelifts over the last 3 to 4 years, I think I probably do more facelifts now than what I used to.
So why did you switch? What made you switch, and what is the deep plane facelift?
Okay, so when facelift very first started, it was sort of lifting up the skin and just pulling the skin a bit tighter. And that could make a difference, but it wasn't where the strength was. And it wasn't really where the tissues were sagging. It was the fat that's in the middle area of the face that's really doing the descent with gravity. So over time, addressing what we term the SMAS, which is the superficial muscular aponeurotic system, which I generally don't bother explaining to patients because it's too long and difficult. But it's a fatty, fibrous, slightly muscular layer below the skin. And when you grab that and pull, that really lifts the face up. And then that's where the strength is. And when I first did my training, and I worked with a lot of experienced surgeons, and the deep plane facelift had been described a decade or so earlier, they were sort of mostly of the opinion that for all of the extra work, effort, and perhaps potential risk of going into the deeper plane, that maybe it wasn't worth it. And they're saying, look, to start your career, start off doing a SMAS lift, keep really safe, don't have any problems with the facial nerve, and you'll be happy. And these were really experienced surgeons, and I took that to heart, and I think it really served me well for 15 years. And did a lot of facelifts, 500 or 600 SMAS lifts. And the thing that worries surgeons when we're doing facial lifting surgery is the facial nerve. So the facial nerve is that nerve that supplies all of the muscles of the face for expression. So it lifts your eyebrows, closes your eyes, makes you smile, and you really don't want to damage it, not even bruise it, because it'll create an asymmetry in your facial expression. So it's like having a stroke on one side and you'll smile on one side and not on the other. Mm-hmm. And so nobody wants that, and it's pretty scary. But over the decades that the deep plane facelift has been around, I think it has demonstrated that you can lift the face more and you can hold it up more strongly. It'll last longer. And you get a better result. It does take longer to do, and you do go closer to the facial nerve. In fact, you're right on the facial nerve. Frequently, you can see lots of branches of the facial nerve when you're doing this surgery. But because of what we call surgical planes, with the right surgical technique, you can actually separate it quite easily. And the facial nerve is still very well protected and safe. You shouldn't really have any issues with it. And, yeah, I find I can do a better facelift now. But it's a long procedure. So about 4 hours, really.
Right. And so is it just the one facelift that you do? Like, because I know that there's like I've been watching on Instagram overseas and stuff like that, and I've heard of things like the ponytail facelift, the cat, like it seems like there's different techniques as well. So is there one that you usually prefer to use?
Yeah, I wish I – that's really what I want in my career, is to say, here is my one facelift operation, my one nose operation, okay. And only do it like that. And I to think that would just make life so much easier. Except different people want different things.
Yeah.
And I have some people who want the safest lift possible, and the potential that maybe facelift is higher risk is not where they want to go. You know, they want to see some improvement. They don't have to have the ultimate improvement, and they want a smaller lift. I had somebody recently just wanting a neck lift, and normally when I do a neck lift, I will start at the earlobe, in fact, in front of the earlobe, bring it up behind the ear, then sort of just inside the hairline behind the ear, and then coming down and behind. And I had this one patient who said, yes, I see all these ladies and they have this little white line at the base of their earlobe, but I can see, I know they've had a lift, and I just want it to be totally behind my ear. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of more like the ponytail lift, and you just make the incision at the back in the hair. And it's a little bit more of a nuisance. I think there's a little bit of limitation in what I could do. But her neck looked great, and she was so happy. Mm-hmm. And she got what she wanted. And I feel that's a big part of my job in doing this, is helping people get what they want rather than what I think they should have.
Yes, but I guess by the other thing, like sometimes someone will come and say, this is what I want, but you'll be able to say, look, this is probably not going to work for you because of this or whatever.
So yeah, that is one of the hard things in the job. It comes in a number of ways. There's that body dysmorphic disorder sort of bit where somebody is just asking for something that they just shouldn't be asking for, and trying to talk them down from that without sort of insinuating that, you know, there's something wrong with them. But there are certain patients just that shouldn't have certain operations. Mm-hmm. And then, there's somebody who's seen something on social media and says, that's it, that's the thing for me. Mm-hmm. And then, but if they don't understand some of the selection criteria for that, then that may not be a good choice for them.
Yes.
And then the other thing is, if the surgeon doesn't do that technique, then it can be a bad idea to change your technique to suit the patient. Because then you just may not get the level of improvement that you expect and that you want and that the patient wants.
Yep, that's true. And that could be the same for them as well, not getting the what they expect, from the surgery. So
with every surgery, there's definitely a learning curve. And I always hope that, the operation that I do better that I do today is better than the operation I did a year ago, and a lot better than an operation that I did 10 years ago. I'd hate to think that I don't get better over time and learn from my own experience.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no, that's true. So how many different techniques of facelift do you actually have?
Oh, gosh. So at the moment, we'll just skip all the thread lifts and the technologies and talk about surgery.
Yes.
There's a short incision facelift. So the incision just starts at the base of the earlobe, comes in very close, just inside the ear, and then into the hairline. And then sometimes I'll just stop it at the top of the ear. Sometimes I'll bring it just like a T coming forward into the sideburn hair. Sometimes I'll bring it along the front edge of the hairline up as high as the level of the eyebrow, or I'll curl it backwards through the hair up to the same sort of level. And that all might depend on how much hair they've got in the sideburn area. Some people have got lots of hair, it comes down quite low. And if you lift that hairline up, they've still got plenty of hair. And some people have a really high hairline, and if you lift it up, then they've got bare skin in that temple region, and then that is a real giveaway that they've had a facelift. So you've got to change the incision according to what the patient has. And the most minimal procedure that I do is the original max lift, the minimal access cranial suspension, MACS is the term for it. And you just use a permanent stitch and do a number of looping bites into that smash, and then hook it up to the cheekbone, just sort of in front of the top of the ear, and that just cinches everything up and lifts everything up a little bit. The next step from there, I'll take a strip of the smass out, and then I'll pull the smass back. And then the third level is to lift that smass up and sort of do a deep plane dissection with the small incision. So even with a small incision, I've got three different procedures that I might do. And then you can take the incision behind the ear, and you've got similar sort of choices as to what you do underneath the skin. And then I might just do the neck lift part of it, so make the incision just behind the ear, mm-hmm. and then just grab what we call the platysma muscle. So if you bite together and go, mm-hmm. and those bands that form, so you grab that muscle at the back and pull it back, and there's that hard bone behind the ear, which I'm sort of tapping, see, mm-hmm. And then stitch it onto there. So that's sort of the range of facelift surgeries that you do. And then you go up into the brow and do a variety of temporal lifts. And sometimes you combine a temporal lift with the facelift.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's like obviously there's – so one of those things, you can only determine what a person needs when they come and see you. You work out what they want, and then you can work out the best way that you can give them – you know, which technique will give you the best result for their what they want.
What I feel is the really important part of the consultation process, because the surgeon is meant to be the repository of knowledge and the skill to do it, and the patient has their desires but also what they're willing to go through. And so I often sort of say, well, what is it that you want? Mm-hmm. And what are you willing to do to get there? And I think we talked about once I had this patient who didn't want to have surgery, and then we said, oh, well, we'll do threads, and he doesn't want to have threads, and we'll do fillers, and he doesn't want to have if some people are comfortable with bigger operations, or only comfortable with a smaller operation, or not comfortable with any operation, and then that determines what I offer to the patient. Say, look, I've got this whole range of things we can do. I need you to explain to me where you're at, and then from there I'll tell you what the best option for you is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that kind of gives us the surgical, and I guess you'd probably go through the same process for non-surgical, but can you tell us what kind of offerings you have for facial rejuvenation in the non-surgical arena then that you do?
Yeah. So I've had the Ultraformer myself.
How good is it?
Three times now. So you've had it.
I had it on Tuesday this week. So I'm post at the moment, but I noticed that just before I got it done, like I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to be at the point now where, like, oh my God, I've got such floppy little skin under my neck. And so I can't wait to see what the outcome for that is. Like, I can definitely see a slight improvement with just a few days. But
yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? What sold me on the machine. I had the treatment my first time, maybe a couple of years ago, 18 months ago, and then the next day I'm looking in the mirror and sort of saying, I can see a difference, mm-hmm. a real difference, and that's sort of what I wanted. It is a bit bitey. It can do the tightening at different levels, and the last time I had it, I just had a really superficial one just at the skin level, which was really comfortable. I don't think it probably creates quite as much tightening, but maybe I just didn't need as much tightening after I've had a couple treatments already. Mm-hmm. I like the Ultraformer. I think that's it really does make a difference. It doesn't do a facelift, but for people who are just starting to get that little bit of sag and just want that little bit of tightening, I think it does work well.
And why does it, I don't know what it is, but why is it that after you've had it, your skin just feels good? Like, what, I don't get it. I just don't get how, because I know it works on the skin tightening, but how can it give you that kind of glowy kind of,
glow.
I don't get how that works.
It's all to do with the blood flow and the healing process. And I think that more and more science is coming out about this. In fact, there was a paper published a few weeks ago and was saying that retinoic acid, which is the active form of vitamin A, and we use it a lot for skin rejuvenation. I put it on my skin every single night. Actually works through a similar pathway to fractionated laser resurfacing. So the little burns and the healing process that started off by the laser is doing the same process under the skin as even just having the retinoic acid. And I think it's similar with Ultraforma. The tiny microscopic injuries that are done underneath the skin are setting off this cascade of chemical processes where your body is healing itself, plus the increased blood flow into the area, and that's why your skin looks good as well as tightening after having Ultraforma.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it makes sense, hey?
It does make sense, and it's great that they're getting more and more of the science worked out for it.
True, because, yeah, people want to know the how these days. I just want to know the really. It does, it works, I'll give it a go. So tell me, so we've got the Ultraforma. What else would you say if someone came in wanting like their saggy neck fixed or whatever, what else would you do? Because I know that you've got threads, but threads didn't actually work on me. So like obviously I'm too far gone for threads.
Threads, I've been a little bit up and down with threads. Personally, I don't do a lot of them, although there's a couple of other doctors in my practice who do a lot of threads and they love it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because I see the results of surgery.
Yes. And
for me, the little results you get from threads. But there are new threads out. There's the new mint threads. They're thicker and stronger. The barbs are sort of molded into it rather than sort of a nick made into the thread itself, which weakens it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they will be this new generation of threads and they'll be stronger and lift things up. Certainly, though, for me, when it comes to lifting, if somebody sits in front of me, sticks their fingers, you know, on their cheeks and pull it up, it means I'm going to be talking about surgery. You know, if they're just, I just want a little bit here, then I'll go to Ultraforma. And still fillers, you know, for some people, it's a deflation problem. It's like that picture of the deflated beach ball, and then you pump the air into it and it sort of all lifts back up and the skin is tight again. You know, we don't want to go back to those really overfilled days with massive cheeks and stuff. But a couple of mils of filler in the cheeks and especially the temples. I'm loving filling temples.
Oh, I think that makes such a difference to my face. Like, I agree with you. I had no idea that was something that you could
I very rarely have anybody come in and say, "Oh, look, can you give me pretty temples?"
Exactly.
the great thing is we go out and like nobody sort of looks and says, "Oh, wow, your temples are looking fantastic."
Yep.
But you look younger.
Yep, totally agree. So now I'm just fessed up. So whenever anyone sees me and think, "Oh, you look really good," it's because I've had my temples filled.
Yeah. So I still think fillers are a great anti-aging treatment. They do work.
Yeah. Well, how long would that last? And the only reason I ask is because I'm like, it's been ages since I had that done. I'm like,
it does. I think a good 18 months and even longer in some people.
Mm-hmm.
The technique that I use places the filler right down deep. And I think the deeper the filler goes, generally the longer it lasts. The natural enzyme that's in the skin that breaks down the hyaluronic acid isn't there in as such a concentration, so it just lasts longer. So it's actually really quite a good value treatment as well.
It does
a good job and it lasts for a long time.
Yeah.
And then just making sure your skin quality is good too, because nothing ages you as much as having old-looking skin. So I just had a hydrofacial this morning. I use gallons of skincare products, and you know, we do treatments like Viva, which is a radio frequency needling treatment, and that just improves quality. It does do a bit of tightening. We like it sort of just underneath the eyes, just to create a tiny bit of tightening there. It does some really nice things to the skin. And I think that makes a big difference as an anti-aging treatment as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, it's sort of it's a combination of therapies that can actually, you know, achieve, you know, help you to look good, basically, get you feeling the way you want to feel.
Yeah, so it does range from, you know, the minimal things. And, you know, to me, the minimal is sunscreen and skincare. And that's simple, affordable, and it's something that, yes, you need to do it every day. But it's like brushing your teeth or brushing your hair. Some things you just have to do every day to maintain what you need to maintain.
Exactly. It's all about maintenance as well, hey, looking after yourself. And because you'd be surprised how many people I actually speak to that don't even use a sunscreen. And I'm like, mind you, having said that, it's only been the last few years that I've known that that's been, you know, and that's probably from hearing people speaking at conferences and saying the number one rule is sunscreen, and I had no idea until someone said it to me. So unless someone tells you, you're not really going to have any idea, eh?
Yeah, and well, there's so much information out there, but you've got to start with those basics.
Yep, exactly. So Tommy, the last thing I wanted to ask you, so the best, and I always come back to this, the best way for someone to, you know, to have the best sort of skin or look that they can is you kind of find yourself a clinic, align yourself with that clinic, go in, have a consultation. So like, do you guys offer consultations for people that just want to sort of say, I need to do something, I don't know what I want? Because I get lots of people saying, oh, I need to have skin needling, or I need to have this, whereas maybe they've just seen someone thought, oh my God, that looks great, I want to have it done. But they're better off to actually go and find somewhere and say, I want to, you know, improve this or look like this or whatever, and actually go with what is suggested for you, rather than just randomly say, I want to go and have skin needling, I want to go and have this.
Yeah, I definitely think that's important. So we've got now a big group of really highly trained and experienced dermal therapists, and they really know their stuff well. And so from skincare products, peels, hydrofacials, microdermabrasion, IPL, radio frequency, Viva, Tribella, lasers, there's so many things that they're using every day. They can give you that sort of advice and give you a plan and a program. Yeah, it's not just, oh, I'm going to go in and have this treatment. It's more working out what do you want to achieve with your skin and just having a plan to maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And I guess good thing about Academy Face Body is pretty much that's what you do all day.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it? It's what you do all day, every day.
Yeah, and so we've managed to build up this great team of people with a huge experience. Yeah, that is. That's all they do. And when you've got so many sort of like-minded people working together, you know, they're pretty much across everything that's in the industry, very comfortable with what they're doing. And, yeah, I think that's the way to get the best possible results.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that's become really apparent to me since being in this industry, like, because I trained as a beauty therapist when I first left school, and I never, ever practiced. I ended up, you know, going to the public service. But the old role of beauty therapist that kind of, you know, evolved over time, but like there's a real movement in the industry now, I think, for dermal clinicians and dermal therapists. And it's I've discovered myself, it's not like a beauty therapist, it's like it's totally like there's a degree qualification for dermal clinicians. So like it's a really highly regarded position, because I notice, I see surgeons that actually hold dermal clinicians in really high regard because of the qualifications that they have and the experience and what they know about the skin itself, you know, not over and above them, but you know what I mean? They have so much respect for them because they realize how much they actually do know. So don't think that, you know, if you're seeing a dermal clinician or a dermal therapist, don't think, oh, it's just a dermal therapist. It's actually a really big deal these days. Like it's a really highly qualified job, hey?
Absolutely. That the training in that area has come so far over the last 15 years. I know, and they are extremely well trained and have a really deep understanding of the skin and how to look after it and the treatments that are there.
They do. Yeah, they know everything. Like you can hear, they rattle off all this stuff. Like, wow. Oh, awesome. Well, look, that's been so good having a chat with you today. It's always fun to talk with you, but it's always really good to just learn that little bit more, you know?
Yeah, no, look, thanks again, Trish. Great to be able to speak with you and everybody again.
Lovely. So thank you so much. And listeners, look, if you want to find out more or if you're interested in checking out Dr. Jason Oates, you can check him out on our website. We do lots of podcasts with him, so he's on our podcast as well. You can Google him. It's Jason Oates, as in OATS, and it's Academy Face Body in Subiaco. Where else are you? Where else are the clinics?
So we've got another clinic with the day spa and the dermal therapists and injectables in Cottesloe as well.
Nice. Day spa sounds delicious. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Oates.
Great talking to you. Look forward to speaking to you again.
Lovely. Bye.
Bye.
The Plastic Surgery Hub podcast, connecting people with practitioners. For more information, visit plasticsurgeryhub.com.au or email info@plasticsurgeryhub.com.au. The material provided in this podcast is general information and does not constitute medical advice, nor is it a substitute for consultation and advice from your own practitioner. It should not be used to diagnose or treat any medical illness. Any medical or surgical decision should be made in consultation with your own doctor or practitioner and not based on the materials provided in this podcast.